Okay, hi everybody. Welcome along to Wednesday evening, and those of you here and those of you online. So our topic is the spiritual teacher, and as a preliminary for the actual teaching, we will take refuge together, generate a mind of enlightenment, and say a few prayers. You will actually engage in the teaching. So please get comfortable in your seat. You need to just make slight adjustments so that your back is straight. Feet are flat on the floor or on a cushion. Your shoulders should be relaxed and your head sitting evenly on your neck. Lift your eyes closed or remain partially open. And let your body breathe itself. As the body breathes itself, become aware of the movements and feelings associated with breathing. So just for the next three breaths, just imagine breathing in white light and exhaling a dark, murky light. Let the ground become completely pure at the level of the palm of the hand and as smooth as lapis lazuli. And think that all of space is filled with offerings from gods and men, both set out and imagined, just like the offerings of Manjushri and Sanatabhadra. And amidst those offerings and the space above you, sitting on a lion throne, which has cushions of lotus, sun, and moon, is sitting Buddha Shakyamuni. He is the essence of all our kind teachers, and he is surrounded by the assembly of direct and indirect teachers. There are Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, deities. There are the heroes and the solitary conquerors, the Dakas, the Makinis. These all appear in the space above you. And the space surrounding you are all sentient beings. And I think that every single one of these, these persons has at one time or another been a parent to you. And now you, fearing the traumatic torments of an uncontrolled life and the sufferings of the lower realms, we're going to lead all these people who've been a kind parent to you. We're going to lead them to the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. And by going in that safe direction, we're going to take refuge. So join me in saying, I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So from the heart of each refuge object, lights a nectar stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all the living beings surrounding you. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified, and your virtue, your lifespan, and your Dharma realizations are increased. Cleansed by wisdom and love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings in those four boundless states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Again, from the heart of each refuge object, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. Negative karma and obstructions are purified. Your lifespan, your virtues and realizations are increased. I wish you to purify yourself and to accumulate further merit and to increase it. Recollect that the field of merit above you. And join me in saying, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actually lamenting. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. Now, to prevent clinging to the merit is real, and to stop the appearance of the samsaric world, its inhabitants, its torments, recollect emptiness and see that your body, speech, mind, virtues are utterly transformed and reappear as a pure lamp. Provide you can give teachings to others in the future. Do you think that this pure lamp you're going to offer to the merit field? So. This ground, anointed with perfume, stone, and flowers, adorned with Mount Mary, four continents, and sun of the moon. I imagine this as a good field of offering. My own living beings enjoy this pure land. Ye down, Guratnam, and Alakamriatayami. The Buddha accepts the offering, he smiles at you, and you meet his gaze. And looking up into the eyes of the Buddha, you find immense humility and kindness and a sense of certitude that your practice is going to bear fruit. You imagine from the heart of the Buddha, infinite light rays emanate, reaching all environments and all beings. All these beings are utterly transformed into the fully awakened state. And from within that vast state of awakening, you hear the mantra of the Buddha. We start to recite it. Just recite this mantra a few times under your breath. And from the 10 directions of space, It's like it's the drawer that enters your heart. You feel the ground beneath you. You can feel the weight of your body. You can hear different sounds. You recognize that this meditation is one of imagination, which has imprinted the mind. So you have both the causes and many of the conditions there for your own awakening. So decide to develop these different causes and conditions. And authentically enter a path. Now just breathing in deep through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. And keep your attention and come back to this room. So as you're aware, this is this new module we're starting this evening called the Spiritual Teacher. We've got sort of 8 weeks of class and then there'll be a review class. So the topics include our need for a teacher. This is what we're primarily talking about tonight, but also what qualifies a person to be a teacher, the roles of students and teachers, and what to do if the relationship goes wrong. We'll cover these and many other topics as well. Now, the books I've relied upon are these ones here. There's a book at the top called Relating to Spiritual Teachers, Building a Healthy Relationship by Alexander Berzin. And this is, it's been reprinted, and now it looks like this. And it's called Wise Teacher, Wise Student, to Better Approaches to a Healthy Relationship. Now, this is a really fantastic book. And in fact, this book here is out on the sale desk there for $14. Right? It's really good to nick. There's no writing it, anything like that. Normally it'd be easy in the 30s. But it's out there for $10. So I thought, oh, I wanted to read a little section from it to you. So I'll do that and then get an idea what the title is like. So I've shared the information with this book with many other students. It's really, really useful. Really keeps you away from problems. And you'll sort of really, when you read it, you'll understand why other people who've had these relationships with their teachers have broken down, why that may have happened. It's a fantastic book. And as well as that, of course, there are this book down here, The Foundation of Buddhist Practice. This is by His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Chodron. Very easy to read, concise, again, a terrific book. For full-on details, then we have this book up the top, The Heart of the Path by Lama Zopa Poche, and Steps on the Path for Enlightenment. Turning Confusion into Clarity is a really interesting book. We've got very good meditations in it too. And some of you may have seen the talks of his on the internet. The Guru Drinks Bourbon is a little controversial, but that's why I get it. Those sort of things, just get a different take on it. Anyway, you'll find them all useful. But today, we're going to look at why we need a teacher, the different levels of practice, types of teacher, and what's a guru or a lama. Now, all of these questions are really well answered in this book. So here's a quote from a book called The Scriptural Collection of the Bodhisattvas. And it basically shows us why we need a teacher. So I'll read it out to you, and you can also read it, of course, but for the tape. It says, in order to obtain liberation, there is nothing more important than the teacher. Although you may be able to do the activities of this life by watching others, without a teacher, you will not do them well. And this is the kicker, the part I like. How can someone who has just arrived from the bad migrations get to a place they've never been without a guide. But I mean, this is really shocking. You know? I mean, oh my gosh. So this, I always put this one up, it had a good effect on me. So basically this is sort of saying, and I've met some of students like this. These are people, much like myself, who believe that we can achieve anything through self-study and just willpower. However, when trying to navigate or transform the mind itself, it's really, really difficult because your own habits sort of prevent you. You know, it's really useful to have someone external to you to point out where you may be going wrong here. And so in the Buddhist tradition, a spiritual teacher is known as the virtuous friend, and it's seen as the root of the whole path or the foundation of the path, so to speak. So it's sort of, one of the other things it's sort of hinting at here is just reading books alone is not going to do it. They're very useful, of course, books, but like I said, they don't provide the warmth and the directness of a human being, do they? And especially if you respect the other human being and they're kind, of course they're kind. But something, you know, when these teachers take you under their wing, they're serious. So when you make mistakes, they can be a little wrathful sometimes, as anybody who's gone to kids are right? If you're one of his long-term students, he gets to sit right up the front, and he asks you, what do you think, Eddie? And if you're wrong, you'll tell you off quite firmly. And it just might get to the end like this.
You said quite much wrathful, I'm thinking, I asked a question of Kenzie Rupache, and he said, were you asleep for the last 5 minutes? I was like, no. And then he said, well, ask the question. So I re-asked it. And he
said, yeah, no, it makes your heart go through the pattern, doesn't it? That's for sure. And the lovely thing about it, though, like I've been wrong when he's asked a question. After he's corrected you, you never forget it. I mean, that's a great teacher, isn't it? He tells you something, you'll never forget it.
I was just remembering one night here, I asked him a question at the end of the teaching, and he said, have you not been listening to a single thing I've said for the whole night? And everyone looked at me and I just wanted to disappear the whole night.
Yes! But the wonderful thing about, I asked a question another time and I just couldn't get the answer.
Yeah.
And I could not grasp what he was saying. And then he said, do you understand? And the whole class, room full of people were like, yes. And I just went, I couldn't lie. And so he picked on one of the senior students.
Right.
And of course he said, no, you don't know the answer. And so then he explained it again, and he said, do we all understand?
Yeah.
And I still didn't grasp it, and I just kind of went, no. And everyone else was like, yes, yes, so it picked on someone else, and they didn't get it, and it was very senior student.
Wow.
And then he explained it another time, and he said, oh, she got. My face must have given me
away. Okay, great.
But you can't say, like, but the rest of this classroom was saying yes, yes, yes.
Mm.
And I was like, if I say yes and he asks me to explain,
you're in deep trouble.
Are we having people online at all?
Yes, yes. Okay. We've got Mandy. Okay. We've got Georgie's online, and Ravi and Shavinda.
Okay. So, folks, so we've just been talking about some of the experiences with our teachers. One of the students was saying how when the teacher asked her, "Do you understand?" everybody else nodded their head to say yes, and she shook her head the other way and went, "No, I don't understand." So then the teacher selected one of the students who said that they understood to explain it to the student who didn't understand. And the student didn't understand either. And the Geshe-la explained it again, and he asked, do you understand? My student went, no. But everybody else went, yes. So then he pointed them out again and said, then explain. And again, they were mistaken. So these are the great benefits of having a teacher. Because you're sitting there, you're not deliberately lying by saying, I understand. But then when you try to explain it, you find that it's not being explained to the satisfaction of the teacher. It's not perhaps clear enough. And but then finally, our friend, she got it right, her face changed, and you start loving her. Ah, you get it. And this is, I mean, like I said, you can't have a relationship like that with a book. You need a living person to be patient enough with you and to try and keep going.
Excuse me, Eddie. Shivinder online has asked whether it's still possible to meet Kensha Rinpoche. Is he still teaching now?
It's very difficult to meet Kensha Rinpoche at present. He's been unwell for quite some time. He still gives teachings occasionally. Now, so this is quote, of course. But there's also a way of using reasoning, and I'll show you this to you. And of course, as the next week, I'll ask you, using reasoning, why you need a teacher. And so please write this down. So here we go, by means of reason. It says, the subject is a person who wishes to become omniscient. So in other words, a person who wants to become a Buddha so they can help all living beings. So take that person. Person who wishes to become fully enlightened to the benefit of all beings. The proposition is they must follow a spiritual friend. You go, not why? So then the reason is because they do not know how to gather the two accumulations, nor how to purify the two obscurations. They don't know how to gather the two accumulations, and they don't know how to purify the two obscurations. Yeah, good, great. Great. So one of our students, the student in our class right now, has just asked, what are the two accumulations? And then you might even ask, what are the two obscurations? So again, you look at these things and go, what are those? And you'll know straight away, gosh, this is why I need a teacher. I don't even know what the words mean, let alone how to do it. So the two accumulations are the accumulations of method and wisdom. So the method part will deal with the mind of enlightenment, love and kindness, all that side of the work. The wisdom is the wisdom realizing in deeds. And so you have to gather these two and then practice them together. But this is not an easy thing, and of course it will have to be explained to us like how you do that. And then we have to purify the two obscurations. So Ben, you probably know what the two obscurations are.
Afflictive and cognitive.
They are the afflictive obscurations and the cognitive obscurations. So the afflictive obscurations are things like hatred, lust, all the negative mental states. And the other obscuration, the cognitive obscuration, is the imprint they leave on the mind. So the phenomena always appear to you as if they have their own objective reality. But they're sort of separate from you and independent of you. And I often ask the AI to create a number of different questions for each question I answer. So the question here is, if your own mind is currently confused, how can you rely only on that same mind to find the way out? So like I said, we need another viewpoint. We need someone to show us that it's possible to become free from these two obscurations. So again, in this little bit here, because they do not know how to gather the two accumulations or how to purify the two obscurations. So sometimes, if you want to sum up the Buddha's teachings in a very pithy phrase, what might you say that would sum up this?
Sorry, the bad, bring on the good.
Well, really, and it depends upon your mind, right? Look after your mind. So it says sort of do the virtuous, be virtuous, abandon non-virtue, watch your mind. So again, what the sort of saying here, this thing is, if you look at all the Buddhist practices, you're always trying to gather stuff and release stuff. And you're trying to gather the wisdom that realizes emptiness and remove the ignorance that grasps an inherent existence. So you're getting something and you remove something. In terms of the afflictive observations, give me an example. Yeah, on the afflictive obscurations.
Anger.
Okay, what are you going to do with anger, Chris?
Get rid of it.
Get rid of it. What are you going to replace it with?
Patience.
Patience or loving kindness, that's right. So it's just like that, right? We find something that's really harming ourselves or harming others. Yeah, we're going to get rid of that. Yeah. What are you going to replace it with? As often it's opposite. That's what I say. It's quite simple in a way to keep in your mind. Always look at, what am I trying to abandon? What am I trying to adopt? And you'll see it's all dependent upon your mind. So that's that last section of it. Watch your mind, or be mindful. So when we rely upon a teacher, we have to say, well, why are you relying on them? What do you need from them?
Guidance.
Now, guidance to do what?
To be person, to be skillful.
Yes, that's true. Okay. So if we use the language of Dharma, right? We're trying to improve our future lives, right? We do not want to end up in the lower realms. We want to make sure we have a really good rebirth. We're trying to gain a liberation from the afflictive obscurations. And we're also trying to attain enlightenment where we get freedom from the cognitive obscurations. To do these particular things, you could do it by relying upon one teacher or three teachers. It really depends. Now, this next question is, what are the different types of teacher we need to depend upon for the different levels of spiritual practice? So, as you are probably all aware, it's not easy, thing to engage in this practice of Dharma. And, we come across a lot of different teachers, don't we? Like, here I am acting as a teacher. We find some of the monks and nuns acting as teachers. We've got Geshe's. We've got overseas people that come over. And we've got lay persons. There's all sorts of teachers. And as you know, the vast majority of them can't teach you everything. But the ones who do meet who can, you'll find you're really impressed by them. For instance, like His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And who was that great teacher, Chris, we went to see up at CI recently?
Jano
Rinpoche. There's another guy. Man, yes, this is good. Okay, there's the, this guy knows the stuff, right? So you can, I come across them. And of course, those people are so, I don't know, what you'd say, so heavy with good qualities and knowledge, it just comes out really easily. Whereas if I find somebody like myself, I can just stick with discovering Buddhism. And I'm still doing it like 30 years later, so I haven't sort of got much further ahead than that. So at this level, I'm quite confident. But other things, of course, I know myself, but I can't do that. I'm not competent, I haven't studied, I haven't meditated. So you will find that you'll need different teachers to do different things, help with different things. So like I said, to address the specific needs and challenges that we face in our study and practice of Dharma. And there's different analogies that they give to describe these different teachers and the different types of training. So they have this analogy of teachers being like navigators, escorts, and oarsmen. So we'll look at this analogy, but also now we're going to start looking at the different types of teacher that can help us and be very useful. Let's look at our first one. So this is the professor of Buddhism. So many years ago, we were at the old center, One of our students was coming for quite some time. She did the DB, then she went back to university and took a university course on the Dharma. Because you know here, you know, we can't, this course, we can't go too deep on this, can we? And we really don't. So she wanted to go sort of deeper and find out much more about the Dharma and Buddhism. Unfortunately for her, the courses they teach at the university are mainly about Pali Buddhism and not the Buddhism from Tibet. Mm-hmm. So they got a lot of information about that, those types of practices and so forth. So she got that rather than the Mahayana Buddhism. And in fact, so she took me up there to the university one day to listen to a teacher. He was not a Buddhist teacher. He was, what do you call him? What's the Dharma in India, Ben, they talk? It's not Buddhist Dharma, the Hindu teachers. So this guy seemed to be a really great Hindu master. He was blind, too. So he took interesting talks. I was saying, okay, interesting. But then he said a thing at the very end that really threw me off, you know. And I thought, okay, no, you just lost me, mate. And what it was, he said, so of all the major religions in the world, only Hinduism was not named after its founder. And I went, okay, the Buddhists didn't name the Dharma after the Buddha. That was the English in the 1800s, right? It was never called Buddhism. You know, and I was thinking, you must know that. So what's this business of trying to say, you know, we're the great religion because we don't have that sort of thing about naming it after the founders of it. You know, so I just thought, oh, so you're trying to, like, I thought, mess with my head about this, right? And I was going, okay, well, thanks for talking. That's the end of that. So I thought, you must know, right? This is, what are you doing now? Are you throwing a bomb out into the audience? This is what will happen. Maybe it was, you know? I don't know. But I thought, no, in fact, the Dharma was not named by people in India as the Buddhism. Like I said, that came much, much later.
What was it called?
The Dharma.
Oh, the Dharma.
Yeah, the Buddha teaches the Dharma.
And the Buddha, in Tibetan, Buddhism is called Nanpa, meaning insider.
Yeah.
Meaning what's
that? Insider.
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 It says it was called Sanatan Dharma. Is that?
What's
I wonder if that is that Sanskrit. It's that the okay. Sanskrit term is Sanatan Dharma, Sanatan is the way that.
Okay, so there you go. So it wasn't certainly not Buddhism, is it? So let's have a look at some of these different people. And
it means that it's been forever and is discovered.
Yeah, so the word Dharma, of course, like, has got 11 meanings.
You got it right.
Well, you got one right, but there's 10 others you could also talk about. So there are different types of spiritual teacher. So I want to go through each one of them. So the first is called, like I said, the professor of Buddhism, or the Buddhist professor. So anybody recognize this fellow?
Jeffrey Hopkins.
So this is Professor Jeffrey Hopkins, right? So he only passed away recently, didn't he? Over the last couple of years.
Right.
So if you've ever had a look at his books, yeah, like you'll see this guy's done a great service for the Western Dharma students, that's for sure.
Sorry, what's his name?
Professor Jeffrey Hopkins.
With a G or a J?
J.
It was really like the Dharma is really, you can look at it as being philosophy, psychology, religion. There's all sorts of ways you can approach it. But as you know, when you, it's like the study of the Dharma is like walking into a really massive library and there's no index.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, so this, like the student I was talking about to, and then she told me later that the library, you know, is full of Pali literature and very little about the Mahayana. So imagine we walk into a library like that, we probably think it's all the same and go, oh, this is over here, so it's all like this. And like I've told you before, when my first teaching on the Dharma was a teaching on the Four Noble Truths. I'd read two books on the Four Noble Truths, and I didn't understand a word that Geshe-la was saying. Completely different. It's Tibetan Buddhism, a different way of categorizing, using the language. And obviously, they go, I don't know what he's talking about. Like I know, I hear the word truth and four and noble, but there are other things going on here. I'm just going like, gosh, I don't know. So it's really useful then to have, you know, somebody who's quite literate, well studied. And of course, you know, the difficulty with being with Tibetan teachers who speak Tibetan and don't know English, well, it's hard, isn't it? Imagine us having to explain something in Tibetan. Yeah, sure. That would be the same guy. I couldn't do that. Here they are, they're still trying to do it. But we know when they try it, like you say, I don't understand, right? It's sort of common, it's not uncommon. But this is what's amazing when you get like a terrific teacher like Alan Waltz, right? So who is proficient in Tibetan and English, has a post at a university, and then they just speak the English, isn't it? And we can get a really good grasp of it, and they can explain all the different concepts. But this is why Buddhist professors are really useful. But if they're just professors, they're not practitioners. But most of them never practice at all. All they've done is like read and studied the books, and if they're doing PhDs, well, they got all that. So they know a lot of stuff. And that's really useful when you don't know, when you know very little about the Dharma that you're trying to study. Right, this will get a start there. You can ask really simple questions like, what are the Four Noble Truths? Why did they call them noble? You know, and just ask your questions. They should be able to answer all those things. So the Buddhist professor is someone who conveys the teachings from an objective academic distance. Like I said, they're very rare that they're practitioners. They're just people who are really interested in the subject. And that's about as far as it goes. Again, like I said, it's very useful, especially if you want to really dig down into the text and you want to know, like, so who wrote the text? You know, that you find that out, and when? And what was it in response to? These sort of things, a professor of the Dharma or Buddhism should be able to help you with. These people, of course, rarely take in any vows. Of course, Geoffrey Hopkins is a very different kettle of fish. He's a Buddhist professor, he's a practitioner, he's, you know, he can go on and on and on. But here, just imagine they're just professors. These guys should be able to answer the facts of things if they've got questions about it. Now, the second type of person is called the Dharma instructor. And so here I've put up a picture of Venerable Rabina. Of course, Rabina is more than just a Dharma instructor. Many of these the practitioners are much more than just a single title. Now, what I found Venerable Rabina terrific with is actually when Miffy and I used to have private conversation with her and just talk to her. That was when you get all the, not the gossip, but you get all the background stuff and the different things that aren't said in teachings. The Dharma instructors, they share experience. And that's a tremendous thing. To engage with it, to talk to somebody else and listen to what their experiences are. So the professor, they know about the path, but they don't walk it. The Dharma instructor is to be know about it, and they've got to be walking it. And so you're just like glass that gets dropped.
Yes.
Yeah. So the Dharma instructor is like a bridge. They transform, you know, the abstract philosophy that the professor gave us into a lived experience. Do you remember that? This is this great story where there's this fellow in Korea, really highly regarded as a Buddhist professor. He really studied it. And what he studied was the Diamond Cut Sutra. But he's renowned, you know, to his knowledge of this. So anyway, he gets a mission. He gets a call in to go to another monastery somewhere to go and teach about this, to explain the Dhammakaya Sutra. So he's on his way, and he's got all his books on his pack, and he's off walking. And on the way, he comes across a tea house. And the woman says to him, what are you doing? Where are you going? And he explains to her what he's going to do. And so she says to him, if there is no past mind, no present mind, and no future mind, which mind are you hoping to change when you go to the university? And it stumps him. And he just gets called on knowledge with no experience. You know, like, I like that story. That one. Yeah, I'm going to help everybody else, and you get put on the spot. It's like, gosh, I don't even know myself, right? I can't tell you. So we have the starboard suits, we've got a professor, and we've got an instructor. Now here's the next one is what they call a ritual trainer. So I put Geshe Zopa here because, of course, he did these trainings in Adelaide. I think Miffy has gone to an Adelaide and another one in Tasmania, I think. So when he came here, he made all the, what were the little?
The Tormas,
that's right, which we didn't know how to do. So he showed people how to make them, all these sort of things. And then Miffy, at one time, took training from Geshe Tashi Seri. And so you could do this, all the different things, how to hold the bell, when you ring it, how to make the mandala offerings, all that sort of stuff. But these guys could be, they train you in that. Now, of course, the ritual trainer can also be, that it can be both those other guys too. And like Isla here. So he's got a pretty good way of teaching, hasn't he? Like he's not, he doesn't scare you. Well, you don't feel so scared of him, put it that way. It's not that they're out there to scare you. I mean, that's from our side, isn't it? So he's often laughing and joking and helping you do it. And always, like, I think many times with Geshe Zopa, it's like you can't really do anything wrong. He's very, very inclusive and encouraging. Yeah. So things like setting up altars, making mandala offerings, creating the tormas, playing the musical instruments, all these sort of things that we don't know how to do, we need someone to show us how to do it. And that's where the ritual trainer comes in. And the next type of teacher we need is what they call the preceptor. So, a preceptor is basically the person who gives you vows. And so I'll just put this up. It says, the preceptor provides a direct link to the Buddhist teachings, ensuring the authenticity and the lineage of the vows. So you know that when we want to become like Buddhists, we need, often there's a ceremony of some type. And not like somebody like myself could not just go, I'll do that, give you all your vows, right? No, you need special people to do this. And of course you've got, there's different levels of vows, so you might have one preceptor who can do all of them, but then again they might be able to just do two of them. So you might have to have a number of different preceptors too. If I remember when I took the Yamantaka initiation, so of course, before you get these initiations, there's often some talk about what's going to happen. And Arun Geshe was talking about it, and you got this sense of, like, wow. Was he firstly told you about how the Yamantaka Sadhana was created, then the lineage of it, and then you see, so I've got this from the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama got it from Ling Rinpoche, I think it was. Ling Rinpoche gave it to Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama gave it to me. Now I'm giving it to you. And you've got all these other names, and if you read some of the biographies, you go, oh my gosh, like, I'm in this, all these people, and here I am too. but through the sort of special. Yeah, so they could get refuge vows, layperson vows, vows for the ordained at different levels, and of course higher shoga tantric vows and just tantric vows themselves. So sometimes, like I said, you can get one teacher that can do everything, but sometimes you need, sometimes it's not the case. You know, it's not the case that because you're a preceptor, you can give all the vows. You guys have any questions about what I've just been talking about in brief? It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Okay, now we have now we've got these three other little sections on it. We have what they call a Mahayana master. And so, of course, the Mahayana master, what's he going to introduce us to?
Bodhicitta,
that's right. And the Bodhisattva way of life, isn't it? You're going to say, okay, we're introduced to this mind or Bodhicitta. If you adopt this aspiration, then you can go into the practices and so forth, and they'll show you. And they give you the vows. So I remember one time, Kensa Prashari, we got this initiation and then we got the Bodhisattva vows. And then he reminded us, he says, now remember the vows from 7.9 training. Right? So if you've done the 7.9 training, there's a whole section in there, isn't there? 18 root vows of the Bodhisattva. You've got to do those. Of course, they go for any Bodhisattva training. But then there are other vows that are specific to 7.9 training. These are also included. So don't be sort of careless about it. That's what he's trying to get us to say. Now, these are precepts that you've taken. So, don't be sort of revealing.
Are some of those ones in 7.9 training like that?
So the Mahayana master sometimes is a navigator. You know, so he's like on the ship navigating a journey across something. They're inspiring and guiding the student towards fully awakening. Then we have what they call the tantric master. And of course, these people provide the vows and the pledges of the tantric vehicle. So the other one, you get the vows and pledges of the Bodhisattva vehicle, or the vehicle of the Mahayana. And so to enter the Vajra path, or the path of Tantra, you enter that through an initiation. So you must have already taken refuge. Then they'll offer you the Bodhisattva vows, because the tantric practices are all within the Mahayana path. So you get Bodhisattva vows, and then you'll get the vows of the tantra. Now, as Holiness says, and this is taken from Essence of Refined Gold, so some of you might know that every year at CI they do have a Lamrim courses, often based on Essence of Refined Gold. So here is Holiness says, the reason behind the necessity for different qualities in the master that accord with the different types of study and practices simply that the nature of any specific level of training demands a specific guru-disciple relationship. So this is what His Holiness says in relationship to this. He says, and this is taken from the Foundation of Buddhist Practice on page 85. He says, I recommend going about the stages of practice in a gradual way. First, form a relationship with a fundamental vehicle teacher. Learn the four truths and take refuge in some level of individual liberation precepts. Later, as your practice progresses, seek out a spiritual mentor who can teach you the Bodhisattva path. Practice the six perfections and undertake the Bodhisattva ethical restraints. After some time, when you are properly prepared, seek a qualified tantric master. Receive empowerment into that practice and meditate on deity yoga. And so here's a verse taken from a great practitioner called Shabkar, and His Holiness is, also uses this. He says, "From the teacher who showed the path of deliverance, I received the sacred teachings of individual liberation. My practice was to shun wrongdoing and cultivate virtue. From the Bodhisattva teacher, I received the sacred Mahayana teachings on generating bodhicitta. My practice was to cherish others more than myself. From the Vajradhara teacher, I received the sacred teachings, empowerments, and instructions of the secret Mantrayana. My practice was to meditate upon the generation and completion states and Dzogchen." So you can see there's a massive progression here, isn't it? You start off learning to look after yourself, practice of the lower scope, and finding in the middle scope, and it's liberation. Then there's the Mahayana, you have bodhicitta. Then you enter Tantra with the initiation and these two practices called generation and completion. And then on that basis, they move into Dzogchen or Mahamudra. So that's the whole path, like that. And this is all summed up in that little quote that I gave. So, you know, for most of us, so other people here who have not engaged, have not taken a high Shlava Tantra practice yet, so everybody's on that thing? Or not? No, Ben, you're not, are you? Or have you?
I guess she's open.
Yeah, that's right. I can see you're saying. So we've all gone on that trajectory, right? Except we haven't got to Mahamudra's old team. But that is the trajectory, right? We're right up there. In this class, we're doing a lot of the three scopes. So, you know, we cover the Mahayana, we cover the middle scope, and we cover the small scope.
So what do you mean, Dzogchen Mahamudra?
We won't say any more. Now, these are practices.
Like the union of them all, don't
they? No, so Dzogchen is a practice where you deal basically directly with your own mind. And Mahamudra is the same. And it's not just conventional, it's you're dealing with the ultimate nature of the mind. Yeah, so that's. Oh, that's good. That was one of the questions from lots of questions. So I've got a question. Now I was going to say, in this book, so all the stuff about the professors, all that, so they cover all of that. This is, I think, from this book. But I remember this time, one time many years ago, and Mithy had the same problem a couple of years ago too. Yeah, and it stemmed from a simple question you ask yourself. You know, it's like, what is a friend?
Friend.
A friend, yeah. So I was asking myself this question, huh? And thinking, geez, I'm not sure. Because, you know, once it's coming to the Dharma, it's like, you know, if you have a Dharma friend and an ordinary friend, what's the difference? But anyway, so this term friend, and I was thinking, what is a friend, actually? Then Miffy had the same thing. So then she thought somebody was her friend, and it worked out wasn't the case at all. So it makes you think, hey, what is a friend? And you know, I just picked it up. There's a section on what a friend is. I was going, I read that years ago, and I must have just got out. I just picked it up again today. And went, oh, my gosh. There's all this great stuff about spiritual friend. Yeah, so I'll just mention that to you. Tell me, how does a spiritual friend differ from a normal friend?
I reckon it's most of our normal friends are just enablers. And
enablers are
our own ego.
Egocentricity.
Yeah.
That's right. And selfishness.
And selfishness. And if they don't agree with us, they're not.
Delusions. Yeah, very good, Ben. Because when I asked, I'd say, can you give me a metaphor that would illustrate this?
Going with the current.
Oh, okay, that's not that one. Yeah, sure, that's a good one. Yeah, going with a friend, you go with the current. Yeah. Dharma friends, it's sort of against the current. Yeah. Now, normal friends please your ego. Spiritual friends challenge your delusions. As an analogy, a mirror shows your true face, while a mask only shows what you want to see.
His girlfriend?
That's the weak benefits. Challenges your illusions.
So, if you, what do you think would be the most important and beneficial result that could come about if you were to rely upon a teacher?
Teacher.
Yeah, what, for you, right? So we're all relying upon a teacher, aren't we? So what's the benefit of that? How are you benefiting?
They help you quickly.
More efficient.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is the major thing, right? So before I came to the classes, I was trying to work things out myself. I've been trying this most of my life. And I was saying that one of the things that happened to me, I didn't realise at the time, I started analysing the nature of a chair, and I didn't realise I was analysing its ultimate nature. And of course, the chair vanished, because it doesn't ultimately exist. Right? So then, now, when that happened, I got such a shock at something like that, and now I'm sort of stuck, right? Because when I analyse a chair, there's no such thing as a chair. If I open my eyes, there's a chair right there. Now that took me, I couldn't work it out, it took me 20 years until I met a teacher. And I only had to meet him once and he went, blah, 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 blah. Oh my God, that's it. So I could have known that 20 years beforehand and not go through all the problems that I did because I misunderstood my own experience. Yes, our teachers help us move quicker, faster, more authentically, keep you away from mistakes. It's a hurry up thing, you know, can really help you.
Different teachings are more or less relevant to different people. So good teachers can adapt a teaching to be more specific to the needs of the student.
Yes, and so going along with this, Madonna, so you know how many times we have visiting teachers and they go up here and they talk about things and they give advice, and the advice is nearly always general advice. Because that's what you do, right? You're talking to a general audience in general, you give the general stuff from all the texts. So of course when it's like it may suit everybody, but it may not too. And that's where you want like specific advice. So this is where we have these, you know, these students, don't we? We say, would you like to have an interview with a teacher? Because you might have something if you've been pondering. And hopefully you do, because I remember many years ago. And this still goes on. People want to have an interview with the teacher, but they don't ask them about Dharma. They ask them about their stuff happening in their personal lives, right? You go, this is an ordained person. Do you actually think? You know, like, might not be the right thing. I know that, you know, people want to get the lamas to come and bless their house, bless the land. Do all sorts of, they're not really peculiar things, but they're not really about the study of Dharma, which is what they're there for, you know. So I've heard some amazing good horror stories by one of our students who became a translator for the Karmapa. And she was telling me the stories here of the Karmapa, like cracking jokes and laughing and shocked at the naivety and the crazy things that the Westerners would come in and ask. You know? And Ruth was saying, I'm not asking that. So anyway, what I'm trying to get at here is think, if you want to have an interview, think about what you want to say. Form a good question. Because I love that, you know. Rinpoche, he loves it when people ask questions, and it's like, good, that's what he wants to hear. He wants to know where we're at, what's our comprehension of what he's saying. Well, it's like for most of us, I think we're all a little bit scared as the kids remember. It's like, be really careful how you frame the questions. All that sort of thing. Okay, let's do a meditation, right? Now just get comfortable, sit up straight, but relax the body. Just feel yourself on the seat. Now notice your breath going in and out. Then set an altruistic goal for this meditation. Now, have you ever made the same mistake twice? You probably have. And here's the key idea about relying upon a spiritual mentor. We need somebody wiser than us to show us what we can't see about our own mind. And when we meet such a teacher, we just stop thrashing about. We're able to see and follow a clear path. So there are different analogies I use to describe a good teacher. A good teacher can be like a crossing guard to help you cross the busy road safely. Now, we all have different forms of disturbing emotion. So what is it you can't see about your own mind? There's deep confusion, and selfishness, and egocentricity. Even though I can say these words, sometimes they're very difficult to see in our own way of being. Our faults are like dust on reading glasses. Everything is kind of blurry. A teacher is like a mirror. They show us how we exist and what that means. They show us our hidden problems. This is like using a torch to reveal the dirt on the mirror's surface. Now, there are many advantages for relying upon a teacher. Relying upon a teacher gives you access to greater wisdom, many more methods to deal with your problems. So sometime during the week, if you feel lost or confused, or you have a problem that arises, think of your own teacher looking at that problem. Imagine they're helping you solve the problem. Just try and hold that idea in the mind. Whenever you meet difficulties or problems, think of your teacher and the deity being inseparable, and then ask for help. Now breathing in through your nostrils, exhale. And the final part of our class today is a section on these terms called Lama, Guru, Root Guru, these sort of words. Right? And again, I suggest, I think it's on page 14 here, where they talk about these terms and look at the background to it. Right? So first of all, let's look at the word lama. Now, the word lama is, what does I remember from the call? Lama is the word, I think, in Indian? Yes, sir, here we go. The Tibetans translated guru as lama. La means unsurpassable or sublime, while ma means mother. Lamas resemble mothers in that they have given birth internally to what is sublime. In other words, lamas are people who are exceptionally advanced in spiritual development. Moreover, lamas help others to give birth to their own achievements of similar states. The word lama, however, connotes far more. As that which is unsurpassed, la refers to bodhicitta, a heart fully focused on enlightenment and totally dedicated to achieving it to benefit others. It derives from love and compassion. Ma connotes wisdom, which is the mother of all spiritual attainments. Lamas then combine totally dedicated hearts with wisdom and are able to lead others to similar achievements. In possessing these outstanding features, lamas are weighted with good qualities. In fact, this word lama has got even more depth and so forth that goes into over a couple of pages. And of course, there are other uses of the word lama. This is why it's very useful reading this, because like I've just described here what a lama is, but the word lama is also used for people who don't have all these qualities and have not given birth to the sublime. Yes, it's tricky. Yeah. So it's always valuable to sort of know that. So just for instance, Tibetan Buddhism developed four major traditions, Nyingma, Kagyu, Sakya, and Gelug, and spread beyond Tibet to the other Himalayan regions, Mongolia, much of northern China, Manchuria, parts of Siberia, and several other Central Asian cultures. Because of this diversity, the word lama gradually acquired other meanings. One source of confusion about so-called guru devotion comes from thinking that the practice applies to lamas in different senses of the word. So here, like I said, for instance, most serious practitioners of the Kagyu and Nyingma traditions enter a three-year meditation retreat. During this period, they train in the major Buddha Vinyasa Yidam in the systems of their lineage, and they spend several weeks or months on each tantra system. So even doing that, they can be called lamas. But they don't have all these good qualities and so forth. Okay. A lama can signify a ritual master. Although such lamas have trained in meditation, they have not necessarily achieved any spiritual attainments, nor are they necessarily qualified to lead others through the Buddhist path. Nevertheless, they can perform the rituals correctly and can instruct others to do the same. Among the Tibetans, such lamas serve somewhat like village priests. They travel from village to village and perform rituals for people in their homes. Do you see Sopatanka's that story when he sees that little boy? These rituals help to bring prosperity, health, and good fortune to the families and help to remove any obstacles to success. Now, lamas can be monks, nuns, or lay people. But like I said, when you go through here, you go, oh my gosh, there's a whole lot of people that actually don't meet the criteria that I thought a lama actually was. So that's what I find very useful about having this book. So in brief, a lama is someone who has given birth internally to the sublime. So, okay, so without looking at your notes, what was the la part of lama to do with?
Mother.
La,
no, la, unsurpassable. Wisdom? Sublime.
No.
The wisdom?
No. It's the method part of the path. Bodhicitta. Right? Ma is the wisdom. Wisdom gives birth to all the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas, the solitary realizers. It's the wisdom that does it. So the Ma, you can think of Ma as mother, but then think of the mother of the perfection of wisdom. The Ma is the method side, bodhicitta or loving kindness or any of the method side. So again, it's interesting, isn't it? You've got the two truths there in one person. You have, now again, now we've got this word guru. Again, this page, there's quite a few pages here talking about this because they talk about the Sanskrit language, you know, how these different syllables could be broken up and how they can have all different sort of meanings. But in brief, a guru is somebody really heavy with good qualities and spiritual presence. So guru, so gu is short for guna, meaning good qualities, and ru stands for ruchi, a collection. There's a guru is somebody with a collection of good qualities. Moreover, gurus are weighty in the sense of having a substantial presence. Anyone in the room with a true guru, if at all sensitive, can feel that the person's outstanding qualities far surmount those of anyone else. And this is true. As guru also stands for goya, hidden, and ru for rupa or body. The full scope of qualities of gurus embodied far exceeds imagination. Thus gurus are sublime beings, since the u in the word guru stands for uttara, meaning supreme. So you know, so some of you might have heard of the Uttara Tantra. So this is the thing about all the Buddha nature.
And who's it by?
It's by Alexander Berzin. Now, if I think Berzin's put this whole book up on his site. So if you want to, he's got a wonderful site just called Study Buddhism. And I think most of this book is up there. This one is called Wise Teacher, Wise Student. And it's a reprint of an earlier.
Is that the other book about the spiritual?
Yeah, and so this is the same book. So this is a reprint. Got a new title, a new cover. It's the same book, same information. And so if you want to, you know, not spend $30 or $10, right? Go online, look up Berzin, and then start studying Buddhism, and then look up this one, Spiritual Teacher. You know, a whole lot of information comes really valuable and useful. And then I've got another term, which is called the Root Guru. And here the Root Guru is someone who helps us trust ourselves. So these people are the strongest source of inspiration. And you can have a number of them too. So a root guru is a spiritual teacher who most deeply inspires and guides a disciple's spiritual journey. While not always the first or primary instructor, this mentor provides the foundation for profound attainments, particularly in highest yoga tantra practice. Their influence stems from transformative vows and insights gained through their empowerment. As in our lives, we often encounter people who teach us facts, yet only a few actually change who we are. In the Tibetan tradition, A root guru is a spiritual mentor who has the most profound impact on your mind, effectively turning your heart toward a path of inner peace and wisdom. While you may have many teachers who provide information, this specific mentor or teacher serves as a vital source of your spiritual energy and growth. The term root implies that this teacher is the foundation from which all your spiritual qualities grow, much like the roots of a tree, providing the life force for its branches and leaves. Their primary function is to offer inspiration. They do not necessarily give the most lectures. Instead, they are the ones who make the reality of enlightenment feel possible for you. So the question you might be able to ask yourself is, which teacher or mentor has moved your heart so deeply that you felt a permanent shift in your direction in life? You identify that person as your root guru. This is a story now, one of the fellows I'm going now. He told me about a story where he had this experience was very, very strong when he met this teacher. And it was so strong, in fact, that he resolved to become a monk. It took him many years, but he was set, and he finally did become ordained as a monk and gave up lay life. But it was really strange. When he became ordained, I asked him who ordained him, and he told me. I said, why didn't you ask this fellow who you had this amazing experience with? I didn't get an answer there. But I thought, how strange. But anyway, it's just one of those things that happen, eh? We'll go into these terms. At the moment, this is the most simplest way I can put it to you, because there are other things like inner guru, outer guru, secret guru, all sorts of different levels of explanation and so forth. And it can be quite easy to get confused. We talk about the ultimate guru, your root guru. So this might mean the ultimate nature of your mind, because that's the ultimate guru, but it's the ultimate nature of your own mind. And this is all the teachers are driving you back there. That's their goal, to go, look, you have this potential to become enlightened. That's your deepest teacher, this potential, to arouse that. And so the goal of the teachers to get you to go that way, finding all the trust yourself.
Eddie Georgie asks, would you know instantly once you'd met your root guru?
Yeah, some people do, Georgie. Some people, it's like instantaneous. Others, it takes them quite long. In fact, I was quite scared of that happening to me. And I thought, no, I don't want to do that. I fall in love like that. You know what happens? It's terrible. There's no thinking, it's just feeling. So I'm very sort of careful about that. But again, so I went wrong again, right? I was so intellectual, I forgot about the feeling. And then suddenly I realized there's something wrong about my practice, because I don't feel any warmth to my teacher. I admire him for his intelligence and what he can do, but there's no connection. And so once I realized that, of course, then I found out why, and I could remedy it and repair it. Yeah, so in fact, Geshe-la used to say, if you have this feeling, like instantaneous attraction to someone, then it's really important now to analyze and check them. Just don't go along with the feelings. It's great you've got them and you've got this thing, but now check. And on the other side, if you just do it intellectually, you're checking, remember there's these other instructions doing, otherwise it's a sort of a cold experience. It really doesn't make a big difference to you. In fact, Geshe Sopa says, it is necessary to rely on a person who has trained himself, has great knowledge and proper understanding. Otherwise, you may go in the wrong direction. You may want to go west, but you'll wind up facing east. That can happen. So in other words, different levels of spiritual practice require distinct types of teachers to address our specific needs and challenges. So in traditional Tibetan Buddhism, various teachers serve roles ranging from basic instruction to advanced tantric teachings that each match to the student's development. In fact, if you've read that book, it's called, what's the biography of Lama Yeshe, Big Heart, Big Love?
Big Love.
Yeah. Big Love. So, if you want to read that or know some of the stories? Yeah. Remember the story when he said, well, she's a professor now, Jan Willis off to see Geshe Naptin? Oh, man, those are really interesting stories, right? So, Jan Willis, which was a young woman, went to India. She met Lama Yeshe and Lama Zafa. Really loved Lama Yeshe, really felt it, and he was really cool with her. But, you know, she'd say things like, okay, I'll see you on Wednesday, if you turn up on Thursday. Or I'll see you at 4 o'clock, and end up at 4:30. And Lama Yeshe's really cool about this, there's no time for what to do, or anything, just all work all. And then he said, look, I've got this great teacher, I think we really need to go and see him to take these teachings from him. Oh, great. So he says, yeah, sends her off. And so she turns up just like what you did with Lama Yeshe, right? Well, not this time. She comes in, and he's straight on to her, ruffled, you know. You were meant to be here, so what were you doing? And any time in the time of transition came later, he'd be straight on her. And really, so he ended up being a good student. So then, so he gives her the teaching. She says, okay, go back to Lama Yeshe. So off she goes. Of course, she behaves to Lama Yeshe just like she did before. So she turns up late again, right? Guess what? Lama Yeshe goes, where do you mean? Now he goes all off on her. But the smart, I thought this was so smart. Send her off to somebody else. He gets all lost on her. He comes up, now I can do it. And in fact, there was another story of Lama Zopa and Lama Yeshe doing this with their students, right? So they had a terrific teacher. They were really scared of him. Really ruffled young Tapa practitioner. And they didn't want to make any mistakes. So you know what they did? They gave all their work to their students. That was skillful. Anyway, we've come up to the end of our class. Are there any final questions you want to ask about this? In their last lifetime.
In their last lifetime.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I guess you'd know if you're a solitary advisor, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not, you're not. Like, but I just find that interesting because they don't need a teacher.
Only once, right? In the very last lifetime.
Last time.
Where they're about to achieve another, just like the Buddha.
Right, okay. Yeah. So that's the exception to needing to have
a teacher. Yeah. Remember, they've got to have that teacher all the way up to that final last lifetime, right? They've relied on teachers then. In fact, there's a great teacher from the Nyingma tradition that Alan Walsh has a lot of respect for. He's written a number of books, translated one, and he did not need a teacher.
Vinda just wanted to check if Dzogchen, isn't it a set of tantric practices to attain an enlightenment faster? Would that be right?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
No, but I can tell you, very quickly goes to any book with a good index in it. You can look up Proverbs Dzogchen and it will tell you. And he might even, if he likes, it's a good question to put into AI. Ask it, what's the difference between Mahamudra and Dzogchen? There's a slight difference, but basically in the language of the difference, but they both try and do the same thing. Okay, let's do our last meditation and then we'll call it quits. Thank you. And just sit in a way that feels good for yourself. Drop your shoulders, lengthen your spine. And as you breathe out, let all your tension go. Just make room for clear thinking. We again set an altruistic motivation for the meditation. So we need to learn why and how spiritual teachers help us grow. So imagine a big mountain range with peaks of many sizes. And these mountains metaphorically illustrate different levels of spiritual work. And like climbing, each level needs new skills and help. It's like having good guides for different trails. For an easy path, you can have a guide for that, but for the harder ones, you need a guide that is familiar with that hard path. The hybrid teacher, a spiritual teacher, changed your spiritual journey. A good guidance helps you move forward better. A good teacher helps you avoid mistakes and learn faster. This is like being with a very skilled climber, showing you secret paths and teaching you the key skills to reach the mountain peaks. Now, have you ever had a teacher who helped you solve a difficult problem? And so you'll recollect of how beneficial it is to have a good teacher, how useful it is. A bit like finding out how what looked like a hard mountain to scale becomes easy with the right guide. And how one might learning about teachers change how you seek help. So you need to sort of think about what you want in a spiritual teacher. What qualities will matter most to you? Inhale slowly and exhale slowly. And just let your eyes start to open. So we know why we need a teacher. Tell me, someone, why do we need a teacher? What's the reason? Two observations. Excellent. Thank you again. Yes. Good on you, Luke. Very good.
Yes.
That's right. This is why we need teachers, right? And there are different types of teacher. So give me, name three types of teacher.
Ritual master.
Professor.
Mahayana master.
Preceptor. Temperate master. Good. Excellent. That's great. Guru and Lama. Lama, what's the meaning of Lama? Well, the Ma is for the
wisdom.
The wisdom, excellent. The La is for the method. Excellent. And Guru means heavy with good qualities.
And strong spiritual presence.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So like I said, Study Buddhism, that's the website. If you want to go out and find this whole book up there with Burson's material up there. There's a meditation with the material that you should have on writing your spiritual guide. And this reads it. So Ben's memorized it, he's got it. You guys memorize it. Next week I'll ask you. And so next week we'll talk about searching for and finding this Mahayana teacher. Yeah, finding a teacher and the different qualities. Okay, so done well, everybody, and we're over time, so let's dedicate our merits. So join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain a state of living Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme dual bodhicitta not yet born and rise and grow. May that dawn have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as thinking beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. In the prayer for His Holiness's long life. The wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incredibly kind things and guests I beseech, may all your holy wishes please spontaneously fulfilled. If only the prayer for Rupesh's return. In holding and spreading the movie's precious and complete teachings with explanations and practice, you wore the armor of patience and have never discouraged. Incomparable venerable guru, to you our blessed services. Okay, thank you everyone. Thank you those of you online. Thank you for the questions you asked. And travel well.